And welcoming you, dear listeners, to this Wednesday edition specifically, which is also a primarily a public holiday for many of you out there. Obviously, we at Eagle FM, we always bring you the insightful discussions and always ensure that we continue the discussions and programming for you always during the course of the week, even if it's on a public holiday. So, guys, once again, welcome and stay tuned for the rest of this afternoon's particular lunchtime drive time session. We quickly have to take a quick ad break and come back right after that.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relation, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And we come back right there, dear listeners. Obviously, this is as you're in our company, and from now, which is the midway, well, obviously 1 p.m. up until 2:30 p.m. And for many of you out there, primarily who are enjoying the particular sort of like celebrations of the International Human Rights Day, or if you wish to call it World Human Rights Day, whichever one you wish to do, just don't do a South Africa, because South Africa decided to put theirs at the start of the year, somewhere in May, somewhere over there, while the rest of the world enjoys it in this side of the part, this part of the year, which is at the end of this year, obviously to signify and to signal that, you know, this is a celebration for international, for human rights all across the planet, specifically since Namibia is one said particular country that we love to preach the discussion specifically of human rights protections, human rights adherence, and human rights compliance in many capacities and discussions or even realms around the country. And in many cases, it is even sometimes based upon indications where we see, you know, the politicians themselves also hammer on this particular point. However, we do have a unique perspective up lined up specifically for today's particular session here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, on the radar, where we will start off from a particular rights-based conversation, a conversation that is meant or pointed towards helping or pointing to an aspect of some or one particular part of rights protections throughout the country. This was a particular conversation that happened earlier today, specifically where various Sun paralegal representatives were part of a workshop and a training session that was conducted by the Legal Assistance Center of Namibia in terms of understanding some of the rights processes that they can enjoy. This will then be followed on by a conversation that stems through from the Electricity Control Board's public presentation discussion about the proposal of NamPower, who wishes to become an aggregator. And then that will then take us into our third particular talking point, highlighting a recent signing event of a Memorandum of Understanding between the Ministry of Agriculture and the University of Namibia. We step forward into our first particular talking point here on this afternoon's session of the On the Radar. This is as 10 December is the World International Human Rights Day, and earlier this morning the Legal Assistance Center held a training session for Sun paralegal representatives from across the country to help them better understand the topic of rights and the rights that minority groups can enjoy in celebration of this day. Now, this event is aimed at community-based human rights capacity development and the documentation of skills building. Now, many of the participants were from regions like Omaheke, the Etosha area, and the Tsumku area, to name a few, where most of the Sun groups are found. Now, the representatives are meant to have a better understanding about the rights-based processes and the complaint mechanisms in the communities that they hail from. One of the guest speakers at the training was Mr. Martin Matsweep from the Endangered Languages Association of Namibia, or alternatively known as ELAN. And Matsweep outlined that there are core areas for people from the Sun communities to understand what rights they have when it comes to identity, language, access to assistance, and more. Let's have a listen what he outlines in this discussion.
Good bring you a breakdown of endangered languages in Namibia, and then I will explain the two concepts, the language rights and linguistic human rights. They are interlinked, but there is a slight difference between what is a language right and what are linguistic human rights, and why the implementation of linguistic human rights is important. Why is it important? Do we have policies in Namibia? Do we have laws that, for example, the linguistic human rights are implemented? And then I will... And we will go into the core areas, and those core areas are the four core areas for linguistic human rights, and that's what we have on the handout. And Sanders informed me that you are broken down into clusters, and the clusters will work. Maybe to see one group will work with dignity, and another group will work with identity, and etc. So, and then the implementation of the linguistic rights, that will be something that you will do either in two groups or clusters, and then we will end our presentation at team. Okay. Objectives. So, I structured, although not in the same order, I structured the presentation in the way that I was given the objectives by the legal assistant center. And why language is a human right linked to dignity, culture, and participation. So as we are discussing, you will realize that we need, the language is all you have. It is your birthright. It reflects what you are. And when you were introducing yourself, I saw none of the people that introduced yourself in an original sound saying there's nobody that says, "By I'm Friedrich Kuhn," or whatever. So you have, some of you have got hereditary surnames, some of you, and Caprivi surnames, and that's manifest a big problem. Because identity lost. And I know, for example, that there are some people that do not speak their language, and from the onset, because it's not offered in school as well. So, identity challenges that Sun speakers face in schools, very serious one. Because we had a meeting, and it was 2 weeks back, with the Minister of Education, which we believe will be very successful. And they are working currently on the Utwansi curriculum, so that at least for the lower primary, the Utwansi should be taught up to grade 4. I don't know, you're coming from there.
Yeah,
so they started already. We have appointed the education officer as yet, the education officer, Ms. Shongombe. She's working very seriously on that one. So in schools, but if you go to Wapata, then you have got a different kind of perspective.
It's a different development.
Yeah. At Wapata, they are taught Shilozi. Same in Mahenge. So Botswana has the narrow syllabus, but Kwabis does not have the curriculum in schools. So these are maybe things that will come up in the discussions. Traditional structures and the justice system. Describe how language barriers can cause or worsen human rights violations. Well, Sanus will remember that the Hiltons, we had a meeting with what was that organization of Suetanis? Indian Trust. Yeah. And so we had a meeting at Hilton's, and there was some people that were actually crying because their rights were violated, especially in the Kaaba community. And identify ways the paralegals can support community members facing language challenges. And connect language issues to advocacy, documentation, and outreach. And I'm glad that I'm meeting this group, because I'm part of the reformed LNS task team with the Ministry of Education currently, and we are going to establish what we call a language development institute. And for advocacy, we are glad that we have met the paralegals, and this will possibly be the goal to start when we reach out to the communities.
We're going to take a short break, dear listeners. We come back with the second part of that discussion regarding the human rights discussion that obviously took place a little bit earlier. We'll be back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katutura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katutura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nuku tite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka.
We come back, dear listeners, there from that quick break right there. And we continue with where Mr. Matsweep left off in terms of the engagement. Now, Matsweep gave an overview of what the United Nations has outlined in terms of the endangered languages around the world and the challenges that they particularly face. We have a listen to what he adds here.
The UN has got what we call a special rapporteur on indigenous minorities, and they have passed maybe a lot of statutes with the rights of indigenous people, the rights of promotion of the languages of indigenous people. And what they reported already in 2030 was that their challenges to the enjoyment of rights of linguistic minorities in all regions of the world. It starts from school. I don't know the Namibian government whether they deliberately do not see the rights of the Sami people, actually, with regards to not only the languages, but you have to go to those places to see, to know that the government has deliberately shunned these people, because they're in Rundu. It's a tragic case where people are actually living in, what do you call this, shacks, real shacks. Because here in Rundu, it's corrugated iron sheets, but you find people that are put into their shacks in order to live, have a place to live, to go and sleep at night. So the ink had already been discovered in the Namibian government who believe norms. And there are restrictions to learn and receive education for their children in minority languages. Almost all of the Sami languages are not offered for schooling from grade one, even the pre-primary. The only language we are currently working on to develop is the Lingala. And there are limitations on the use of minority languages in public life and the media. Okay, the good thing is that the NBC is having a radio station for the Sam people, but there are different Sam dialects or languages. Should we say languages? Because what we have observed is that the Barafuenas, they cannot understand each other. From the ones in the north cannot understand the way the ones in the south speak. Yeah. So but there is a radio station. But from public life, minority languages highly excluded. If you cannot speak English and you go to the hospital, and especially in the villages, it is very difficult to explain to the doctor what ailment the person has, unless the person knows from somebody in the streets. Well, some diseases are confidential. Yeah, you cannot go to the doctor and say, can you tell the doctor I have the age or something? Yeah, and then their minority languages are under threat of significant decline and disappearance. And you will see it on the next slide. The educated people call it the desuetude or pigeonization. If you listen to Nigerians, they call it the Nigerian English. Yeah. Nigerians think that they are Nigerians from the village. They have learned some sort of English. And this English that they have learned, they've mixed it with their indigenous language. Yeah, and they are pitching English. You can hear in their songs. Because if you watch some Nigerian movies, then the English changed to something else. Yeah. So that's called pitch. So what happens is that due to the influence of these international languages, especially English and the dominant languages in your area, you unlearn your indigenous languages. Your mother tongue, and you keep speaking the other language. You go to school, grade one, you take a different mother tongue, and etc. So, it will come out in the presentation or in the discussions. Now, what is an endangered language? When is a language endangered? Now, there are six criteria. I will start with the extinct one. When a language is extinct, there are no speakers of the language left, and there are some languages that are going to watch out.
Now, Matsweep also highlighted specifically that the further talking points in terms of looking at the levels of endangered languages are also an important guide or an important level to highlight, and that the various types of examples of what these threat levels actually resemble. We have a listen to what he adds here.
We know about, maybe you heard about the Katrina issue. In the Cape.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the last remaining speaker of a language called the Tok language. And Tok. X-O-O. Yeah. He's the last remaining speaker of that language. And ANC used their dollar for the language to survive, but there's nobody else that's speaking the language, so that language is at the extinct level. Critically endangered. The youngest speakers of the language are grandparents. Now, in Namibia, that language is Khoi. Khoi, only the old, the elderly people speak the language mostly. And the young people are trying to learn the language. Now, Khoi is a Khoisa. It's in Wapanda area, you know, from the country. So that language, it's only spoken by those people, and that language is critically endangered. Severely endangered. The language is spoken by all the generation, grandparents, etc., and may potentially be understood by parents, but they do not speak it amongst themselves or with their children. That's severely endangered. Okay, now I do not know. Yeah, Lorraine, you should help me. I'm hesitant to say Haitong. Yeah, because the Haitong, they have been dominated by the Tamaras. Because their physical features and everything, they look Tamara. And they speak more Khoikhoi than they speak the Haitong language. Yeah, so that's one big problem, and that language is severely endangered. There are people who know the language, there are people who understand the language, but they do not speak the language with others. And when they go up, even with their children, they only speak the Khoikhoi language. And then we have got definitely endangered. This children no longer learn the language as their mother tongue, as they grow up. So these ones you know, eh? Okay, and then we have the vulnerable. Now we see most of the indigenous airports in Namibia are vulnerable. Children speak the language, but it may be restricted to be only spoken at home and other domains, which means since that's because of the ethnic setup in our country, we have got I believe 11 or 12 ethnic groups. So when you go out there on the street, you cannot speak well with everybody. You cannot go out and say, "Hey, Marisa," because you have to leave your home language at home, and you have to start conversing in English. And that makes it
Now we come back from that particular indication and explainer based upon the threats obviously faced by minority languages as well as also the explainers associated to them. This all highlighting specifically the various conversations and even insights that you can have on the discussion of human rights, as well as also what that sometimes is represented by. Now, we get into our second particular talking point for this afternoon's session here on the radar, and we take a look specifically back at the Electricity Control Board's public presentation of the proposal by NamPower to become an aggregator, which also included a presentation by an identified participating power producer known as the Nathaniel Makhwalili Power Plant, which saw Henny Steyn, representative of NMPP, providing an explanation of what this relationship between NamPower and NMPP would actually entail. Now remember, dear listeners, this was part of the discussion obviously based upon where we heard about the conversation by NamPower at earlier this particular week, based upon a scenario of that they wish to achieve a different particular scenario. This particular scenario would entail potentially the utility being able to supply into the SADC power pool. If you don't know what the SADC power pool is, it includes a select few SADC countries like Namibia. I know Botswana is there. South Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and there is one more. I think it is Mozambique. Specifically being able to buy and sell electricity between each other. Now, presentations that I've also seen in other considerations have included presentations specifically by the overall authority of power-producing countries in the Southern African region. This authority's name is known as SACRI. SACRI had outlined, for example, countries like Angola, which are completely separated from the rest of the SADC power pool. Angola is one of the countries that actually does produce a lot of electricity. However, there is no connection between the SADC power pool and Angola, for that example. Now, Namibia's particular discussion obviously has it focusing in on its own particular abilities to be able to supply into this particular platform. We have a listen to the presentation, or the first part of the presentation, that the representative of the Nathaniel Makgolele power plant, that being Mr. Henny Steyn, outlined in the presentation earlier this week.
Again, my name is Henny Steyn. I just want to make sure that I give a bit of background on Nathaniel Makgolele. We are licensed under the ECB rules for 586 megawatt firm generation, baseload generation, and we have an export license for the same value for 586. That information is available on the ECB. So from that point of view, I would provide an overview from our perspective, but I want to make 100% sure that you all understand for the record that we are not a proponent. The proponent is Manpower in this instance. We are a participant, a potential participant as an IPP. So from that point of view, I will go through the presentation. And my presentation is very short, to the point. We look at it from a very clear, independent point of view. So let me start. I think the most important point from our perspective is to look at the Namibian landscape. The Namibian landscape is small relative to the market where we're living at the moment. If you look at the SAP market, South African market, Namibia is below a gigawatt. From that point of view, there are limited synchronous resources available in the Namibian grid, meaning that the Namibian grid is actually maintained through the Eskom grid. So from that point of view, there is limited activity, availability from any generator to participate in this market. So because there's limited supply, it limits a lot of things. It would definitely limit variable energy sources from that point of view. So looking at that, and also we all know Namibia has a lot to offer in the renewable space. But having no firm supply makes it a particular questionable activity. Then obviously from the Namibian grid is extremely sensitive to any form of generation, and that requires all sorts of balancing reserves, etc. So I'm going to give it an overview from the way we see as an IPP, how an aggregated framework should be working. And I think it's important from our point of view, one of the key issues that were raised from day one with the electricity control board with ourselves was the fact that we need to find export opportunities for our generation. We would have to do so very successfully. We have sold all our energy potentially, but that requires a participant in this exercise who can actually deal with the aggregation activities. From our point of view, we look at it such a small grid. We would like to see NAMPOWER retaining a form of control in terms of as the utility in terms of dispatching, because that can make up whether the plant would operate and
lower load factor or a higher load factor. And eventually, on the other side of the load factor is at the border, once the energy reaches at that particular point, that's already been dealt with. We also see manpower support, you know, a firm export without compromising the domestic supply. In fact, it actually enhances domestic supply in the sense that you now have a synchronous type of generator on the grid that can actually move and react to certain activities that happen on the grid. So from that point of view, it creates a coordinated dispatch, and it can also assist with the trading activities. I think Gordon mentioned it very well earlier on in terms of when energy is dispatched, you know, making up the balancing parts of those, that's a, we see the aggregator plays that role. In this instance, we see NAMPO play a significant role in introducing energy from their side, energy from renewable IPPs, making up this equation, because then it keeps the overall grid stable. And obviously, that brings a number of new types of revenues into the equation. Now, I think you all would know, as IPPs, first thing that would be requested from you in providing baseload supply, how can you actually guarantee that? How can you actually operate in that environment? So that's why we see that it enhances an IPP's perspective. If there's an aggregator role from a from the utility itself. So under the no aggregation, we see that there's, from an operational point of view, as I was already saying, is that there's no dispatch control. The synchronous generator is in self-dispatch mode, meaning that we, the IPP would actually operate that independently from that power. But with an aggregation side, that dispatch control actually moves into the aggregator's hands. They then operate the schedules for dispatching this thing, planned out annually, monthly, weekly, day ahead. All those elements are very well planned. So they play basically that dispatch control activity to ensure that whatever is happening in the Namibian grid remains stable. Whereas if there's no aggregation, you would find a lot of peaks and troughs. There's going to be a lot of issues where balancing and spinning reserves would be required to actually keep on doing that. So from that point of view, on the grid side, there's significant technical risk from the control. And as I was saying, is that from a national grid perspective, having a 586 megawatt operator or generator on a grid or generator that runs around 700 to 800 megawatts, it's self-evident that that would be disastrous for the grid itself. That doesn't mean to grow the grid, it has to be internal, it can be external. But if you actually take the grid in terms of managing, you know, mitigating that, you know, so if you eliminate that, if you eliminate the self-dispatch component, you basically get grid stability on this, because that allows the utility or the aggregator to make sure that there are no oversupply or undersupply. And other activities, like, for instance, which you have to procure separately, are all of a sudden actually now included into this equation. Typical FCAS type of activities, so basically frequency stabilization, etc.
Now, coming back from that first explainer provided by Stain, he also continues on to outline the revenue model and the affiliated impacts on a pricing strategy. Now, we listen to what he adds in this scenario.
So from a revenue point of view, I think Gordon has pointed quite well. You know, there are certain aspects in there from a non-firm charges versus what we see. There is an aggregation fee that would deal with some of these issues. It doesn't mean that that aggregation fee could be less than what is currently covered under the ECB rules. It means that it actually are covered into a singular fee that deals with a bit more in there. So that also expands this issue of dispatching and managing any synchronous activities on the grid itself. So on the no aggregation, there are definite concerns about energy security. But on the positive side, having a proper aggregator type role from manpower, from the utility side, it's definitely giving a trading advantage because, let's say there's an oversupply of energy from the local market that can be supplemented into this. At the end of the day, whatever is delivered at the border, because that's where the aggregation fee ends, it takes it all the way up to the border. From that point onwards, it is dealt with by the different parties. Like, for instance, if you take it into Zambia, there are different players. South Africa is limited in terms of the congestion on the south, but nevertheless, it will soon hopefully be resolved. But still, NAMPOWER's responsibility or the aggregator responsibility ends at the border. They've got no obligation to take it beyond that point. That makes it a very strong argument in terms of creating more generation sources in Namibia itself, because then that capacity would become available at the border. I'm not sure if you have discussions with private off-takers or bankroll off-takers. That would be the first question. How can you ensure that the energy would be stable and it would fit into the narrative of a proper PPA? So, as I said, my presentation is very short. Strategic benefits. Bringing new synchronous generation onto the grid changes the Namibian position in terms of having balancing resources, because it is limited. There are certain rules. I'm not a specialist on that. There are very clear rules in terms of balancing activities that's required. But it strengthens the position for manpower of Namibia for exports. I think, Gordon, your last point was actually a good point in terms of this would enhance more variable energy players to actually come onto the scene as well, because all of a sudden the grid actually remains stable. The biggest concern having more renewables on the grid is because it's all over the space, and that needs to change to a more stable type of supply. So that means the exports would definitely increase. There would be firm capacity, as I explained already, at the borders itself. It enhanced cross-border energy resilience. That is the major issue. From a internal grid stability, having a synchronous generator under the control of the utility, that would be able to respond to all sorts of activities and still balancing. That's a major strategic benefit to the country itself. I've already covered a lot. The second last point definitely enhances the renewable position, and it brings a improved transmission grid export reliability into play. So from that point of view, those are the strategic benefits for the country as an overall. Looking at the benefits from an IPP point of view, first of all, it does enhance the bankability to secure long-term PPAs. I know some IPPs are focused on short-term trading, but for a large generator the size of Ntando Makaluli, having a bankable PPA requires 10, 15, 20 years to ensure the bankability is there. So from that point of view, in selling energy to any buyer, that's the first question. Can we confirm that energy would become available through the Namibian grid? Now, if it's not going to work for the for this, it will not work for anybody. But from that point of view, it brings bankability. So from the IPP point of view, and I'm speaking from a neutral point of view, okay, we might be a baseload generator, and there are other generators in here that are solar and different. the objective remains the same. It will enhance the Namibian system. There would be available technical capacity in this. So, and it drives this whole innovation around sustainable energy and all the new services, because just looking at from, I think there's definitely a desperate need for utility to be a bit more flexible in terms of allowing more energy to flow into this, but it needs to actually flow out of the country. And to do that, you need to make sure that those connectors actually will be operating within that. So having this, if this is in place, the position from a land power point of view would actually be quite strong from a Namibian point of view for exports, especially into the south environment. So from that point of view, it improves the resilience and energy security. That's the way we see it from an IPP perspective. So, in conclusion, we believe that the aggregated model is definitely the next level of innovation for the Namibian context, simply because of the size of this grid. The grid desperately needs a lot more synchronous generation, so to unlock all of those opportunities in there, which is my second point. So it allows the aggregator to actually become in control of the synchronous generator. That provides the opportunity to blend and do all sorts of stuff into it, which you can't do today, it's impossible. Through having a generator of this size onto the grid, and our first phase is on its way, just having that sort of size on this grid would bring a lot of stability into this market. It basically would displace and improve a lot of support required from outside the Namibian context. So we think it's definitely a stable grid through engineering.
We come back there, dear listeners, from that explainer provided there by Henny Steyn from the NMPP power producing discussion, which followed on after the NamPower presentation. Now, the presentation was then followed by a questions and answer session that was sourced beforehand by concerned parties and which was not yet opened up to the general public to table their particular concerns and questions as well. Now, the Renewable Energy Industry Association of Namibia, REON, submitted some questions through their representative, Mr. Polis Mulunga, on what this relationship between the utility and NMPP actually resembles. We have a listen to what he asked.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the opportunity. My name is Paulus Mulunga. I'm a board member of the Renewable Energy Industry Association of Namibia, RAN in short. RAN is a private sector non-for-profit association. I see a number of IPPs here that are not members of RAN. I invite you to the association. Our objectives are the same. We want to promote the uptake of renewable energy in Namibia. Before the presentations were given here today, I had prepared a number of questions. You will see the relevance of those, for government especially. Because you asked that we choose who we direct the questions to, they will be directed to NamPower. I was told that the questions will be projected. If it is possible, you can do that, sir. Otherwise, I'll just read them here. I prepared three questions. I'd like to quickly go through those. The first question was, does NamPower intend to act as a commercial trader, in other words, buying and selling of power, or purely as a market facilitator for independent power producers? That was the first question, and I know we'll touch on that a little bit. Before today's presentation, I was not aware that there was one IPP identified for this project. I thought it was open to all IPPs, but I see that it's for one. So the question is then, is this aggregation model going to be only for that one IPP? Are you going to facilitate the trading of electricity for this? The second question is, will this IPP sell electricity directly to NamPower for export, or will they retain ownership and share export revenues under a specific structure? I think also Gordon also touched on this, but if you're able to expand on that, it would be greatly appreciated. The third question was, what infrastructure investments? This includes transmission upgrades, cross-border interconnectors, are planned to support this aggregator model. So those were the three prepared questions that I had, Mr. Gordon. And after listening to the deliberations, I had two more questions that I wanted to add that are not part of this one. Since I was given 10 minutes, I'm sure I have the liberty to hear those opinions if it is not an issue. So, Mr. Gordon, if you can note this down. The fourth one is general. You hinted at it already, but it goes as follows. Is this opportunity open to other IPPs? If yes, what are the processes and procedures to participate? And then the fifth one, is there a capacity limit for this aggregation that NAPAWA is going to place? Thank you very much.
Now, this was then also followed specifically by the response provided by Gordon Gadney from NAMPOWER, who outlined with the response that this particular response itself was not a finality in terms of being a complete or done conversation. We listen to what he added.
Thank you for the questions. I thought you wrote them down. The time was limited to answer them, so don't accept these as exhaustive answers. The first indication to further the discussions. So on the first question, I think the intent is not for NAPAWA to act as a purely commercial trader, but rather to facilitate the transactions up to the border. I think the key concept and the model we are proposing as an aggregator is to allow NAPAWA to make use of its excess and surplus energy to bring in the mix. Okay. Your second question, we do not want to retain ownership of the energy. It's actually delivered at the Namibian border. So that is where the obligation ends under the aggregation model. We do share revenue for the energy that we've aggregated. I think that was clearly presented in the model. See, there's actually zero infrastructure investments required for the aggregation model to commence. Obviously, as it expands and as it grows, that's a different question. But at the moment, there's no separate investment required. Your last two questions are not shown on the screen, but it was, is it open to all IPPs? I think we want to make it categorically clear that it is not just aimed at a single IPP. It is open to all IPPs, but there are limitations. At the moment, the aggregation can only be put forward to firm dispatchable type of exports. I think we've got some limitations in our network which we need to address first before we can open it up to, let's say, renewable energy generators. And then lastly, the capacity limits. So with no new infrastructure investments, the capacity limits are what they currently are. And that will be the maximum capacity available for any export, regardless if it's NAPAWA or an independent IPP or an IPP treated under the aggregation model.
Now we come back, dear listeners, from that particular engagement, and we're quickly going to take a short ad break and come back right after that, heading into our next particular talking point that'll follow on right after that.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Goeie nuus, Imberg nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. Is jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imberg te geniet? Kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied in 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapungwa eva tere uikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
We come back to your listeners from that particular engagement right there in terms of the ad break. And do remember that the opportunity is still there for you to engage like we did yesterday in terms of callers' contributions. You can come through at 083-288-401. Let's have a listen of what you wish to add, as well as also look into some of the particular conversations that you wish to pose. However, this does bring us to the aspect of the international news segment. We step into that consideration as we head into conversations based upon developments coming through from the Democratic Republic of Congo on bordering onto Rwanda, that specific zone right there, because it comes out as reports indicate that the DRC is accusing Rwanda of peace deal violations, as once again the M23 is advancing into the eastern region of the DRC. Now this is as the Democratic Republic of Congo's President Felix Tshisekedi has accused Rwanda of violating a newly signed U.S. brokered peace deal as the Kigali-backed M23 armed group pressed ahead with a rapid advance on a town near the border with Burundi. Let's have a listen to this engagement.
Growing right now among people in the region, mainly in the city of Uvira, in the province of South Kivu, as the M22 rebels have managed to arrive around this city. We have seen just a few hours, people are reporting around 5 bombs and also gunshots being heard in the city of Uvira, as the M22 rebels have succeeded to capture the city called Kiliba. This was almost the last villages before reaching Uvira, a very strategic area Well, the DRC army and the government has deployed a massive troops around and also equipment trying to stop the move of rebels. But this was not able. The rebels of the M23 fighting under the coalition of the IFC launched the offensive since almost Monday up to now. They have succeeded in the last 2-3 days to capture the main stronghold where the DRC army with their allies were trying to stop their move, like Luvungi and also Kiziba and different other positions. But the fighting of this Uvira is also very significant because it's bordering with Burundi. And the Burundian army has been supporting the DRC in the battle for the last 2 years and now losing together. But they are worrying also because of the escalation, as Burundi is still very determined to defend the DRC army. And they are saying they will stop the move of the M23. But many people are questioning on the real capacity of the Burundian and also different allies of the DRC army. But the main things now and also the worries for the civilians. Some of them have fled from different villages and others were even caught in the middle of the battle and the death were also counted among civilians. But these people, those who have succeeded to reach the city of Uvira, will have now to seek shelters in the other side, but majority of them doesn't have capacity as they don't know what may happen right now in the area. Allen Waikani, Al Jazeera, Goma, the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Now, the U.S. State Department says it's deeply concerned by the ongoing violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo and called on Rwanda to prevent further escalation. It says the Trump administration is working to restore stability on the ground. Mike Hanna joins us from Washington, D.C. Mike, that peace deal was only signed just a few days ago, and the U.S. is very concerned about this. What more do we know?
Indeed, yes. Well, it was the peace deal that President Trump hailed as a major breakthrough in this ongoing conflict. But like other agreements that have been reached between the DRC and Rwanda in the past, this one appears to be falling apart. As you heard there, the president of DRC saying that Rwanda violated the commitments the day after the peace accords were signed on December the 4th. Now, what is happening now is that it does appear that M23, which State Department there confirming that Rwanda is continuing to provide support for the M23 rebels who have been fighting against DRC troops in South Kivu province. Now, they've been upping their conflict levels in the past few days, it seems, in fact, since that signing. And you've got a major crisis here because what is happening is a large amount, thousands of civilians are being driven into the very edge of South Kivu province in the DRC on the border with Burundi. And you now have a situation where civilians are being caught or continuing to be caught in clashes between M23 rebels, DRC troops, and occasionally as well the Burundians who are backing the DRC in this ongoing conflict with the M23 group. So great concern from the State Department and indeed from the White House about what is happening in the past few days, the State Department calling on Rwanda to stop supporting M23 and to meet its commitments to that peace agreement signed a week ago.
I mean, Mike, I think that is the crucial part of this statement that you've just talked about from the State Department. Deeply concerning are the words being used. Things need to come to an end when it comes to this particular conflict. But what are the options, really, for the U.S.?
Well, there are very few options apart from getting this deal brokered with the aid of Qatar as well in those ongoing peace talks that happened culminating in that particular deal. But it would appear that this is the limit to what the U.S. can do at this particular point. Now, included in that deal from the U.S. point of view was getting rare minerals out of the DRC, something that it desperately wants. And that was part of the trade-off for brokering the deal with the Rwandans, the U.S. using what influence it has on Rwanda to bring about this particular deal. But Paul Kagame, the Rwandan president, continues to insist that the violence is coming from the DRC side as well. It's not one-way traffic. But for the U.S., it's a very, very difficult field to counter. Many have tried to broker a peace deal between the DRC and Rwanda in the past, and all have failed, as the current conflict shows. And once again, the U.S. appears to be joining that long list of failed negotiators in this never-ending, it would appear, conflict.
Mike, thanks for breaking that all down for us. Mike Hanna there, live for us from Washington, D.C. Now let's take a closer look at the shifting front lines in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo. M23 fighters have seized a number of important towns across South Kivu province, tightening their grip on the east. Their advance has now brought them within roughly 15 kilometers of Ivuru, a border town on the shores of Lake Tanganyika. The lake forms a natural boundary with Burundi, Tanzania, and Zambia. Now, Ivuru serves as the administrative hub of South Kivu and has hosted the headquarters of the Congolese military since the M23 took control of Bukavu. Now, earlier, my colleague Nick Clark spoke to Zabel Belhalal from the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. He said Rwandan forces have been advancing alongside M23 fighters.
The Rwanda narrative has been the same since the beginning of this crisis. They never acknowledge having troops in the DRC, but the investigation we have conducted show that they are present in the territory. And I mean, they are talking about defensive measures, but the reality is fake. It's there. The Rwandan troops are on the ground, and the group of experts, the UN group of experts, recently published a report saying that they even increased the number of troops on the ground.
So wherein do we find resolution here? Because, again, Rwanda denies backing M23, but says it faces a threat from armed groups with links to the 1994 Rwandan genocide, the presence in eastern DRC. So how do you unravel all of these countering views?
The fact is clear. You have FDLR troops in the DRC, and it's also true that they are supported by the Congolese government. So, and we believe that this conflict will never have a solution if we don't try to address the root causes of the conflict. And a part of the root causes, we always mention the economic dimension of the conflict. The fact that many criminal networks, the transnational organized crime is one of the underlying factors of the conflict. So we need to address the fact that the warring parties are able to benefit from the illicit markets during the conflict.
So what do you mean by that? You mean the illicit gangs crossing the border to access DRC's minerals. Is that right?
I mean, it's not only about minerals. You know, today, if you look into the reality on the ground, all commodities, including minerals and cocoa, coffee, and everything else, are part of illicit economies. And while people are fighting on the ground, we have evidence showing that the business continues. And those who are benefiting from this business are security and political elites in various countries, including the DRC, as well as in Burundi, Tanzania, and also Rwanda. So that's one of the reasons why we are tempted to believe that the U.S. administration approach in bringing the economy at the center of the game is a good approach, but this has to be complemented by the need to really fight against criminal networks and transnational organized crime.
Don't miss out.
Now, we step away from the DRC Rwanda newly flared up crisis situation right there, and we step into another conversation still staying in the African context. We specifically head into the West African scenario, where West Africa particularly faces a very tricky situation of coups and terror threats. Now, this is as the ministers in Benin specifically on Tuesday held their first cabinet meeting after the failed military coup attempt that took place over this past weekend. Now, this is as the Benin President Patrice Talon and his cabinet convened in Cotonou and observed a moment of silence for those who died in the failed coup. Now, Talon thanked neighboring Nigeria for its military intervention, which helped put an end to the mutiny, and Benin is considered a relatively stable country in West Africa. But it is also a member of ECOWAS and the Economic Alliance that recently lost three members, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, after successful military coups had taken place right there. We have a listen to this discussion.
So cabinet meeting after a failed military coup attempt over the weekend. Now, President Patrice Talon and his cabinet convened in Cotonou and observed a moment of silence for the victims of the failed coup attempt. Talon also thanked neighboring Nigeria for its military intervention, which helped put an end to the mutiny. Benin is considered a relatively stable country in West Africa. It is also a member of ECOWAS, the economic alliance that lost three members in recent years, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, after successful military coups. Well, I asked our Lagos bureau chief, Amaka Okoye, about what message the foiled coup attempt sends about stability in the region.
That's correct. It sends mixed messages, if you like, in the region for several reasons. Why is because of the whole idea of insecurity. This coup happening kind of suggests that if another country falls into military rulership in the region, then the bloc, which is already embarrassed, if you like, the ECOWAS bloc, will find that as another slap. And so this is why it's causing tension for security reasons. Benin is one of the countries in West Africa that's been seen as a very stable region. And so for there to be an attempted coup, it means that even that state, that country itself is fragile, and speaks to the general fragility of most countries also in the region. And so some people are really worried on the level of the people. And of course, as ECOWAS, as the bloc, as the region, there is really palpable concern that most countries are likely, if care is not taken, fall into, you know, military rulership. Right.
Let me ask you about ECOWAS, which is the Economic Community of West African States. It calls the current situation an exceptional situation. I mean, do you see its authority weakening after recent withdrawals and suspensions here?
I think that it's been, you know, thoroughly criticized by a lot of people as just a bloc, you know, that does not really put.
We'll quickly step into a short break, dear listeners, and come back right after this.
Is fit.
E filosisho o talikulandula kona avewa yuk. E kwashili palekolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHP. O atupa teleko mesho kwashili palekolo asfika mafio pe dola emilio na omlongo danamibia. Moshi yoshe tukeshe kuyanja o makwafo unamiti e nashane filosisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa aboveli ponje yoshi longo, shijoshi topo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe danando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis mwule o minute disyona elela, lishangifako nhp.com.na o manga ino ya moruendo. Ponje Yoshilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP will provide you.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening, we ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relation, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
We come back, dear listeners, and which brings us about quarter past or 15 minutes past the top of the hour. Two, we continue where we left off with the West African discussion and the issues of coups once again arising in the West African bloc.
Now, to kind of quell the situation, it sat many times quiet when we've had leaders in West Africa. It has said nothing where there is dissent. It said nothing where there are oppositions. And so this time, people are saying that you better act. And just before I came on air, you know, they started the summit, the ECOWAS summit already. And the president was really saying that this is the sort of ECOWAS that they want to see, that is swift, that will respond rapidly, that will, you know, show itself as strong beyond the communiques, beyond the statements. Because if you recall, the three countries that are already out of the bloc, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, they meted out sanctions. They talked about sanctions, but nothing happened. And so other countries, of course, in the region are looking at ECOWAS as, you know, just saying something but not doing anything. And so for them, this is very, very important. They kind of praise themselves, you know, for being swift and that, as you know, saying that this is what ECOWAS should do more, to respond actively, you know, and to see that it is in charge, to be seen to be in control and as a powerful bloc that is supposed to be, Brent.
What about where you are right now? I'm thinking about Nigeria. I know that it played a key role in stopping the coup in Benin. What does this say about its influence and its security priorities in the region?
I think that this is one situation where Nigeria would want to pat its back to say, you know, we've done it as the big brother and to shine. And also just today, the Senate expeditiously approved the president's, decision to send in more troops, to Benin as a way of stabilizing the situation there. It says to avoid more criminality and disruptions. Yes, Nigeria would want to position itself as, you know, being strong and having influence. But it's important to note that Benin is also a country that we have a lot of trade with. There's a lot of economic transactions that is going on. And if anything happens to Benin, of course, our own security, Nigeria's security, is threatened. And so, of course, Nigeria had to swiftly take action. However, it's also been criticized, especially here. You know, a lot of people are saying, yes, we can immediately deploy fighter jets. We can immediately send our troops there. But Nigeria has its own internal problems, security challenges that it's not been able to handle. But on the overall, you would understand if we put it in perspective why Nigeria would want by all costs to protect a country as Benin that is very close to us for security reasons, for economic reasons, and again, of course, to pose as the big brother who is really in charge, if you like, in terms of leadership in the ECOWAS front.
Our Lagos Bureau Chief, Omaka Okoye. Omaka, it's good to see you. We appreciate your...
Now, coming back from that particular conversation, dear listeners, it gets us into the next particular point, this one taking a global particular perspective in what highlights specifically the extent to which global warming is actually proceeding by. Now, this is as according to the European Global Warming Monitor, that the planet is actually on track to log its second hottest year on record in 2025. Now, this is as data from the Copernicus Climate Change Service highlights that 2025 is currently tied with 2023, after an all-time high that was recorded in 2024, making them the three hottest years ever recorded. Now, this is as the latest report from this agency also shows that the three-year average is on track to exceed the 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels for the first time. The threshold is targeted in the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. Let's have a listen to this engagement.
Track to log its second hottest year on record this year. That's according to Europe's Global Warming Monitor. New data from the Copernicus Climate Change Service shows that at 2025 is currently tied with 2023 after a historic high recorded in 2024, making them the three hottest years ever recorded. The agency's latest report shows the three-year average is on track to exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels for the first time. You'll recall that's the threshold targeted in the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. Well, Samantha Burgess is strategic lead for climate in the Copernicus Climate Change Service, which produced that report. Welcome to DW. So is global warming accelerating? Or how do you interpret this new data?
Yes, the trajectory of global warming has increased in the last decade or so, but it's too early to tell whether this is part of a long-term acceleration or a temporary acceleration as part of the long-term warming trend.
Okay, this could be a blip.
It could be a blip, yeah, which is why continued monitoring is always so very important.
Your report points out that temperatures were above average, especially in northern Canada and the Arctic Ocean, which is a bit worrying. Why there in particular?
Yes, so each month the global average is made up of locations that are warmer than average and locations that are cooler than average. We know that the Arctic is warming at 3 to 4 times the global average rate, so we often see exceptionally high anomalies in the Arctic region.
And we saw a series of extreme weather events last month, especially in Southeast Asia. How closely were those events tied to or linked to climate change?
So each individual event needs a climate attribution to understand the trigger and the impact associated with long-term warming of climate change versus extreme weather and the influence of those two interplaying with each other. What we can say without a specific attribution study, though, is that a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture. It's about 7% more moisture per degree of warming. And a warmer, wetter atmosphere has more potential energy available for storms as well. So there's very likely to be a climate change footprint associated with a catastrophic tropical storms that we saw in Southeast Asia last month.
Okay, so climate change deniers could say that, well, one, those Southeast Asia are floods. Southeast Asia floods regularly anyway, so, and there's no data to specifically tie that event to global warming. And you also talked about these averages what you're saying seems to sort of fuel what the climate deniers would say was, well, we don't know enough. This could be a blip. It floods in Southeast Asia anyway. Help us out with that.
Yeah, not at all. That's a misinterpretation of what I'm saying. So extreme events have always happened. We've always had heat waves. We've always had severe storms. What we can say, though, is that heat waves are getting warmer. They're getting more frequent and they're happening over larger areas. Similarly with storms, we're seeing storm tracks changing. So the historical trajectory of storms is changing. The seasonality of when storms and tropical cyclones is happening is also changing. We've always had them, so we can't blame climate change for an individual event, but we need to undertake a scientific study to understand the exact contribution of human-induced climate change that influenced any individual event, made it warmer, made more rainfall fall, and made the wind speeds faster than they otherwise would have been. What we can say is our world is better observed than it ever has been, and the scientific evidence is overwhelmingly clear that our climate is changing all around the world and impacting everyone. It's because of greenhouse gas emissions and concentrations in the atmosphere, yet we have the solutions available to change this trajectory.
Okay, that's told us. Thank you for that, Samantha. Samantha Burgess from the Copernicus Climate Change Service.
Now that brings us to the end of that particular conversation. I did see, dear listeners, that the phone line was flashing. There's still an opportunity to get callers' contribution coming through here at 0832 888 401. Just to let you also know that obviously, even though today is a public holiday and even though today is International Human Rights Day, the opportunity is still there for you if you've not been a subscriber or you've not subscribed to our e-paper platform specifically. I still don't know where you have been living or where you are. The discussion still is that you can still sign on, become a subscriber. There's the Villager website itself. A very lovely content there for you also to have a look at, as we're always all updated regularly right there. And secondly, there's also the e-paper particulars, the direct subscription to participate in. Now, that obviously highlights also some of the particular conversations that you've seen coming through. And one particular indication obviously also highlights some of the particular developers coming through. But before we actually continue, we'll quickly take a short break and come back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, your eye.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relation, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
We come back, dear listeners, from the short extended break right there, and also we get into some of the particular talking points just to round out the last couple of minutes here on today's particular show. This obviously pertaining towards just giving you a slight overview, slight insights in terms of the talking points emanating from today's edition of the Village AE Paper platform. That's we have still, an interesting discussion, obviously citing the amount of importation in the past 10 months that Namibia has conducted, this specifically pertaining towards the quantity of goods that we've imported for the past 10 months. Very insightful account being given there, specifically about the total value of at least 125 billion Namibian dollars worth of goods that we imported. This obviously takes into account the relationship that Namibia has with direct trading partners like South Africa and other immediate neighbors, as well as also those far off in other continents as well. We also take a particular look specifically at the talking points that emanate from the mining sector and the water utility NamWater, specifically where a joint venture had been signed between Sokop Uranium and NamWater in that regard, in terms of a desalination plant's production or installation for that matter, to help and assist with further production in that aspect. Rounding it out specifically, we obviously also take a acute analysis. I say acute, not cute, but an acute analysis pertaining towards the recently announced free tertiary education subsidy that the Minister of MESAC, that being Minister Sanet Steenkamp, highlighted in her address recently. And there's obviously pertaining towards the notion of conditions that were applied. And some of the particular indications that obviously that emanate from the particular statement that the ministry also cited. One of the interesting things, just for you to mull about, if you go and look primarily at the address that was given by Minister Steenkamp, there are certain things that exist currently in the realm today. When I say the realm, the tertiary education realm, the minister cited that the subsidy is not open to students who wish to advance with postgraduate degrees. However, in the same scenario, the minister also cited that some postgraduate levels will be covered in the subsidy as well. So there is a clear indication, for example, like with my alma mater where I studied, the indication is like what is known across the world in Southern Africa, in South Africa and Namibia, because I'm showing you the levels right there, is that the first postgraduate level actually starts from an honors degree, and some honors programs or some indications or some if I can call it institutions that have a honors degree program would be covered and some honors degree programs would not be covered. So it does throw a little bit of a cat into the chicken coop scenario right there. Obviously contained within the article right there for today. And then there's just to round out some interesting talking points, obviously the notion of a resettled farmer's story that my colleague Anakleta Iker, my colleague Matthias Hangala highlights in that article. And on that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for today's edition of the On the Radar here on your number one talk radio station. We'll be handing over specifically to my colleague Loise, as the Undangwa studio is ready and roaring to engage with you. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon in our company, dear listeners. Let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow. And remember, oh, there's also later today with the China Corner come about. Let's have a listen and engage on that particular notion. On that note, stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwe tira osu
omutiha hutekiro kabuna ii matina omjo shika oshafafa na nana nongeshe fa ya ishiwike mo Shiwana, ilio moya wo, ota imbongo tita mweni. Ana gesefa ya Namibia, ombito ombwa na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayakuro ni randitoma iwe, yongesefa yoyo kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngwe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa letu. Moambo, dengira selma, onarahe tatu imu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha hutekiro kabuna ii matina omjo. Chika oshafa sana na nongeshefa ya ishi.